Hi, and welcome again to another edition of International Writers Network. And I have a great treat for you right now. Her name is Rahim Salah. Rahim, how are you? Rahim, how are you?
I'm good, mate. How are you doing?
Oh, you know, it's a pleasure to have you here today.
It's a real pleasure to be here.
I've heard so much about you, then I had the opportunity to actually hear your spoken word. And definitely, we're in for a good surprise. Not just me, the listeners here today. So, before we start, because we like to get to know the poet, the writer, and why they're doing what they do, you know. So, you're beautiful and young.
Maybe.
Yeah, I've seen that. And you're a great performer. When did you actually come into the whole realm of writing?
So I'd say I was definitely interested in, like, the arts just growing up. I was really into theater and writing in general. When I was younger, we used to do a lot of creative writing in schools, but I just never found my niche in, I guess, poetry till about college, specifically spoken word poetry. I had seen my friend had pressed going to an event over on Facebook for a poetry slam with the UCD Litsoc Literary Society. I was very interested because I watch a lot of spoken word poetry on YouTube. It's a very big movement over in the US. So when I saw that event and it was a competition, friendly competition, I was like, oh, why not just give it a go, write something to perform. And sure enough, I wrote a poem. I don't know how it came to me, an idea or the flow, performed it, and that competition actually ended up being a qualifier for an inter-varsity college poetry slam, which I ended up representing UCD in, and I've just been writing ever since.
Right. So now, this is interesting. You said you were in UCD when you started your poetry, or when people recognized that you were a poet?
I'd say definitely in UCD when I started writing my poetry, when I was definitely taking it. Yeah, like I wasn't randomly writing poems like growing up. I was just always interested in reading, listening. I think I was just absorbing a lot of like words and you know, just soaking it all in. And I think it just flowed out during my college years.
Okay, and you grew up in Ireland, didn't you?
No, I grew up actually in Canada first, and then I moved back to where I'm originally from, to Saudi Arabia, for about 9 years, and then I moved to Ireland in 2010. So I've done my last 3 years of secondary school and then college here, and now I'm currently working.
Right. Now, that is fantastic. So what was it like to just go in for this? Because I love poetry slam. I can't do it, but I love watching it. It's so it's really out there, and your brain is really quick, isn't it? So how did it feel to be chosen when you just said, let me have a try?
It was amazing. Honestly, I'm not gonna lie, it was an amazing feeling. I felt that maybe I'd finally found my niche, you know, something that I could be good at, because I used to perform some plays when I was in school, and I knew I was okay at that, but I wasn't amazing. And then I did like to write, but I knew I wasn't great at writing like short stories or long stories. And so spoken word was this really beautiful in between of performing your own words in the shortest time amount possible. So a lot of poetry slam competitions, there's a 3-minute limit, and I like that because I didn't have to waffle on for ages and ages and ages without a purpose. I like writing short pieces with as strong a message as I can get delivered. So that's why I really love spoken word poetry specifically.
To me, that's just something that is really interesting. So you don't write creative stories, but through your poetry slam and your spoken word, you actually present us a story. You're going to give us two poems today. And yeah. I've been reading other poems of yours, and I'm like, oh my God, you know, this woman is just amazing. And one of the things that I think I want to try and link together, just tell me if it's right or wrong, because we try to understand how writers are writing so we can be better writers ourselves, those who are listening to us. Now, you said you read a lot.
Yeah.
So that probably gave you a lot of insight to words and how it's conveyed. So when you want to make short, pointed, direct kind of messages in your poem, was there a link to that? The fact that you're a great reader and now you want to do things short, precise, a bit like a weapon, using your word like a weapon to send messages to people.
Yeah, it sounds a bit... I guess that's a bit accurate, even my word as a weapon. Growing up, thankfully I was in Saudi Arabia, but I was in international school, so I was always surrounded by English. I consider it my first language. And then when I just got absorbed into story-making worlds while I was in primary school, so that definitely had an effect on my vocabulary and the way I think, and it just really broadened my horizons for a lot of topics that weren't really, particularly relevant to, say, myself or my peers back home, but, just relevant to, people all around the world. So it definitely really inspired a lot of my spoken word kind of themes, and also as well watching a lot of spoken word videos online. I find, personally anyways, that a lot of people that get involved are from minority communities, or they touch on, really big important topics to them, and I find that very inspiring, especially considering I'm a Muslim woman wearing a headscarf, and to be able to convey a message personal to me and to many others is a great privilege.
Right. Now, one thing is that looking at the Dublin City of Literature, they had a year of words, they were celebrating words, and one of the things that you featured as one of the poets in one of the bookshops, because they went throughout that year, I think they had about 12 different bookshops whereby they, poets were celebrated, and you were one of them. So congratulations for that. And and you performed such a beautiful poem that has so much meaning. And I want you to introduce that, because that's one of the ones you're going to read to us today. What were the thoughts behind, because I can understand why they chose you to do that. I really can. When I went through it, and when the listeners are going to hear it now, there is a purpose to your writing. Am I right?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Definitely. Great. So what was the point behind that particular poem that you were chosen for?
So I remember I wrote that poem initially. So I had been asked to perform a poem for World Hijab Day. It's a day all over the world celebrating women who do or don't wear the hijab, but kind of just recognize the importance of it in our religion, in Islam. And I got to thinking, writing that poem for World Hijab Day, this is around the time as well when, France was imposing a ban on, the full-face burqa. There's just a lot of I don't want to say Islamophobia, but a bit of Islamophobia at the time, just uncertainty around, women who wear veils. And, I just wanted to get the message across what it actually meant to wear this hijab or this headscarf. For me personally, which I knew echoed a lot of mutual feelings and sentiments from, fellow Muslim women who did wear the headscarf as well, and convey, the reasons behind why we wear it and, the purpose of it all. So that was really a driving force to, I remember I think I finished up home in an hour, because I was just sitting there writing. I was like, okay, I need to say this, because it's a poem I'm very passionate about.
Well, you know what? I first heard you in Glencree, and when you performed that, I was like, I was even scared myself that, my God, we never even thought about the way women who wear, I wear a scarf for personal reasons, but when people say, this is what I am, I love what I heard that day. And then I heard it again. And, before this particular interview, I've been kind of hearing it over and over again. And each time I hear it, there's something that is making me feel, hey, listen, you've got to listen to other people. They really have a reason why they do what they do. So take it away and just tell us the story through this particular poem, please.
Would you like me to perform this poem?
Yes, please. We're waiting.
So the poem is called You Think I Wear This For You. You think I wear this for you, as if Islam means submission to your man-made conditions, don't include us in this game. Where labels replace names, where less means more, and more means we can't think for ourselves. Whoever said that potential is confined to a cloth on your head, this is only half of what I represent. Let me show you the other that's not so apparent. Hear my words, exchange my thoughts, uncover what's been revealed through a cloth. Identify me by my headscarf. I am a Muslim woman. So listen to me speak. Don't paint me as a picture worth a thousand words. I have so much more to say and do and contribute. So let me choose what to show you. You think I wear this for you? As if this scarf equals religious, apparent modesty, sacrilegious? No. It is so much more than what it seems. Inner character and good deeds. Kind to parents, kind to neighbors, give in charity from your labor. No one ever became poor by giving. You think I wear this for you? As if I don't notice how I'm not part of current trends, coming up with new ways for us to overspend. Don't exploit the reasons for our representation. Since when did hijab change from that to presentation? You think I wear this for you? A commandment in my religion, I choose to listen and follow to please the one that elevated women above others. Heaven lies beneath our feet. Children commanded to be gentle with us in speech. Love your mother, then your mother, then your mother, then your father. Can't you see how beautiful we women are honored? Do you really think I wear this for you?
Again, I'm speechless. Thank you so much for that performance.
Thank you so much for letting me perform that.
Thank you so much. Now, what has been people's response to that? Because it's a real education within a few minutes. I don't even think you took 2 minutes.
Yeah, it's a very short, it's quite a short poem enough. I think the way I perform as well, it tends to be a bit faster than the words. But honestly, I've been so overwhelmingly positive. You know, I didn't think, again, when I initially wrote this, this was just purely for an event in Trinity. It was for their Muslim Students Association. It was a very small kind of circle. So I didn't think anything of that when I first performed, because I was performing in front of loads of Muslim women who don't really wear the headscarf or do wear the headscarf. But I think there just had been a couple of people there who, you know, weren't Muslim and just didn't know anything about the hijab. So for them to hear it, it was just a great response from them. And then I got asked to perform in a couple other places. And then I happened to just, you know, pick it to perform for the Dublin City of Literature Project. But just, I don't know how it just escalated to where it is today. But I've had nothing but love and support, and a lot of, you know, questions satisfied from people who don't necessarily wear the headscarf. And, you know, a lot of gratitude as well from women who do wear the headscarf, because I feel this is exactly what they've been wanting to say, or been trying to say for years, but not being able to get it across, you know. And a reminder to us Muslim women who do wear the headscarf, why we wear it in the first place. So it's been great, to be honest. It's one of my poems I'm exceptionally proud of, to be honest.
It's absolutely fantastic. Thank you very much for letting us know. And I understand why people would be liberated just for hearing those poems and say, yes, this is why I do what I do. It's not for you. And you gave us many, many understanding there. Thank you very much for being bold. To do it, because it's boldness, isn't it? Now, what are the kind of poems do you write? Obviously, I see you as an activist. Am I, you know, is it a, I wouldn't say political, are you a political activist, or are you just a poet that writes things that you feel needs to be said?
Yeah, I'd say writing things that need to be said. I definitely see a shift in my writing style compared to when I first started. You know, at the time I was just, you know, talking about stories, you know, talking about as well poets do love and all that stuff. And then I think I just started writing at a time when there was just a lot of things happening in the world, political uncertainties, injustices across. And then I heard a few poems of like activists, and that really inspired me or made me realize, you know, how powerful words can be.
Yes.
So I'd say I'm definitely like an activist poet in the way I write. That'd be like my main theme, touching on minority subjects, touching on things just happening in the world. I think so. that pretty much sums it up.
Well, that's good. It's always good to have a spokesperson in, because you also make it more fun when you perform, and like you said, it hits home where it needs to go in. It needs to get straight into our hearts and lodge there and develop, yeah, and we'll be able to chew on it, you know, which is, I mean, it's a great example, because here in Ireland, that's what they did before the before their actual independence. A lot of poets and writers were writing things, and those things were germinating people's heart, that, yeah, you need to get independent, you need to do certain things. And so I hear where you're coming from, and I actually admire it very much. Now, before we go to your poem, today we're talking about freedom. Mm-hmm. What does the word freedom mean to you as an individual and to you as someone that writes?
I'd say freedom to me means, you know, allowing me to make the choices I want to do, you know, for myself, for others, allowing people to express themselves, live the way they want to. In my writing, especially at the beginning, you know, just kind of accepting who you are, explaining, you know, things that maybe the public wouldn't really be fully aware of, to allow that freedom of expressing our true identity and being happy with that as well. So it's a bit of a loaded question. I didn't have a chance to think about it. I don't know if I'm making much sense with my definition of freedom, but I think that's just the first thing that would come to my mind.
So do you feel free yourself?
I do. I feel very liberated. And I think it was definitely through my college years where I came to a point where I was just very happy with myself and my choices. And, you know, I just had all the freedom in the world to do. I think the main thing with freedom is just accepting yourself, and once you have that, it's just, you know, the whole world is in front of you, and I feel like that's just the most liberating feeling in the world, and that's what I would say is freedom.
So now, for other people who haven't come to that place, what would be your advice? How do we get that freedom?
I'd say to be awareness, acknowledgement, listening to other people as well, accepting them. You know, again, this is just in an ideal world. I know it's not necessarily happening at the moment with, you know, a good few people, but I'd say it's just in dialogue, so communication, you know, and open communication, and not just letting it happen, but forcing these spaces and conversations to happen.
And I suppose poets have a lot to help us to liberate by giving us words that we could use, and to, like, I'm sure, you know, if people are repeating those words that you've written, it begins to liberate that, yes, I can wear this, is what I've chosen to do, it's nobody's business but I do, but my own, you know, that kind of thing, and that kind of,
yeah.
Do you think so? I think your poem has already liberated many, it's still going to liberate more, especially the younger women as they're coming in, saying, no, I can do this, this is my choice. And so yeah, thank you so much. To be ourselves, to be free.
I mean, it takes a lot of time. Like, people take years, they probably don't find themselves until they're, you know, like, quite much older, which is a shame, but it's also a journey to get to that stage. I think just allowing that to happen without any kind of judgment or prejudice is amazing.
Now, on the second note to that particular question, it wasn't supposed to be, but what kind of training did you have? If I could say that, did you go to courses? Were you part of a writer's group? Were you just one of these poets that actually write in your room and write spontaneously, write what you feel you need to write? You don't need anybody. What type of poet?
Yeah, honestly, I did like an elective in UCD for creative writing, which I really enjoyed. I've tried to engage as much as possible with like courses and lessons. It just isn't, I don't know, it's not something I found myself I could progress in. Again, that was when I was young at the time, so I don't know, I might benefit from going back to it. But a lot of the stuff I'd written was just, as you said, like, not even on a piece of paper, it's on my phone. Because when a thought comes, I just have to write it down as soon as possible. So I never really had any formal kind of training or writing or teaching. It was just something, I think a lot of my poems genuinely just come from my heart. And I'd write a train of thought and then come back to it a while later when something happened, and be like, oh my God, this would totally fit the theme of the poem for this, and then just continue on and on and on. Or, for example, I'd get invited to events and I'd be like, oh, this would be a perfect time to write a new poem. And then I just kind of, it would just flow out that way.
I love it, running. You're just letting it flow the way it should. It's just floating through you, and you're exercising it where it's possible. And so now, can we have your second poem and then talk? Because I love this as well. I love your work. You know that now.
No, you're very kind. Do you want a bit of a background, or will I just go?
Yes, please, before you read Blanket.
Yeah, so this poem is also a very special poem to my heart. I think I wrote this around the time when there was the whole the refugee crisis going on, and there's just a bit of uproar in the world about how some countries or some people weren't willing to let refugees in, and that really, even though I'm not a refugee myself, but, you know, really hit a nerve, you know, how people could be on, you know, very cold, people who are really in need, and people are dying trying to get to safe refuges. So this really inspired me to write this poem, which I called Blanket. They asked me if I wanted another blanket to keep warm for the night. What can I say that my eyes already don't? What do the tired lines, the deep creases, the dried up tears that are sure to fall again all too soon, do they flow too softly, pour too quietly? Shall I resist the urge to keep them closed because I do that anyway? Shall I let my hands do the work as if they weren't messy enough, meshed in blood and dust and dirt? Trace them back to the borders if you don't believe me. Trace them back to the barbed wires where pieces of my flesh I've left behind to keep my arms free, a sign of my sacrifice to carry my child to freedom. Ask me if I want another blanket to wrap her in so that she wouldn't have to feel the ground against her skin. Ask me, ask me, ask me. Throw me hope instead of words. Take me away from a land that's deserted me. Carry my back and heal my wounds from the knives that slice through in a place I used to call home, a desert space where everything crumbled. Give me your blanket. Maybe I'll use it to block out the voices that tried to scream 6 feet under and deep into the waters we crossed, limbs pulling at the sides of empty air. They call suicide and we call survival. Or maybe I'll use it to wrap my mind in so I wouldn't have to imagine where they buried my people. If they buried my people and shoved them into the corners of their minds the way the world wants to do. This is a war. This is a plea. Give me a blanket of security. Let me build myself on a country. Let me stack the bricks and build a home. I've done it once before, so give me a chance to do it again.
Do you know, you take my breath away. you paint so many pictures with your word, and you give us so much imagery to understand what it is that we need to consider. Do you know? So thank you. Kudos to you.
Thank you.
And
so
I'm
much.
Sure the listeners too were touched by that. Now, how can we follow you? How can we get more of your work? How can we be inspired by these, you know, you're changing our thinking, you're changing our attitude. How do you get hold of you to hear more?
So I am currently working, and it's been a long time coming, and I've been saying this for a good while now, but I am making my Instagram and hopefully a YouTube page up soon. It's just been difficult to think with the pandemic, I'd have way more time, but I'm working as a doctor, so I'm always in the hospital. It's been a very tough year trying to sit down and, you know, develop that platform and start writing again. But I'm hoping to have a page up called The Unspoken Word. It's already up if anyone's interested to follow, with no content. So I'm hoping to add more to it. And hopefully more projects and collaborations and more writing pieces in the future.
You know, it's been a pleasure to have you here today. Now, just one word of advice, because you're certainly a very wise woman with great words, inspiring words. Now, if there were other young Muslims, young women like you that wanted to write, what would you be saying to them today?
I'd say just do it. A lot of people hesitate because they don't think that they can write or they're good writers, which is no such thing. I feel like whatever words you come out, it's it's valid, it's relevant. It doesn't need to be approved or necessarily liked by anyone. As long as it's genuine and it's your words, I say just let it flow. And to never be afraid to use your own voice to express whatever it is you want to express. Because the world deserves to hear that, and you deserve to, you know, tell the world what you want them to say.
You've just taken my breath away again. That's a genuine advice, and that's very good. We look forward to following you up, and we encourage you to do your Facebook. We look forward to your anthology when you do that, and thank you for being on the International Writers Network. We are very blessed to have you today.
Thank you so much, Mary, for this privilege. Honestly, it was a great privilege and a lot of fun to be able to chat with you about everything I've done. So thank you so much for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you. We appreciate you.
Download a podcast and catch up on your listening at near.ie.
Near FM.
How's it going, brother?
All right, what's up?
Are these guys any good?
Dude, these guys are class.
I hear they play the best homegrown music live every Thursday night.
Yeah, on Near FM 90.3 from 8 till 9.
The Near FM Sessions.
The digital experience. Missed a program or an interview? Catch up now online with the Near FM digital experience. We're online 24 hours a day, podcasting every day. Visit nearfm.ie/podcast.
Hi, hello, and welcome to a quick promo for my show, The Electric Wave, on Near FM on Thursday evenings. If you like your tunes electric and maybe a little eclectic, with a tinge of 80s electronics thrown in, then join me, 7 to 8pm every Thursday on Near FM 90.3. I'll be playing everything from Kraftwerk to New Order, from the Human League to the Galaxy. By the way, I'm Rob Garvey. See you all 7pm Thursdays for The Electric Wave.
90.3.
This is Near FM. And we are privileged and honoured to have on the phone, because it's COVID, Fiona Bolger. And she is from Ireland, but what an experience we're going to gain from her as we go through her writing journey. So, Fiona, thank you for coming
on
the
Mary.
Program. How are you?
I'm good. Under the circumstances, we're all just chugging along. How are you?
I'm very good. It's good to have you on the other line. Now, Fiona, before we get into all your poetry, because you have a wealth of knowledge, and I was just looking through the YouTube the other time. There's a three-year-old girl, and she, you know, she can recite poetry just like, wow, what amazement. And I have a feeling from reading your little, what you've sent me so far and what I've seen on your website, it's like, did you come out with a pen writing? Was that because the way you use your words is just fabulous? How was it for you?
Well, as a child, I was forever, I spent a lot of time with my grandfather, who, although he was an engineer, had so much poetry in his head, and he would just start reciting poetry, Seamus Heaney and Chaucer and Oliver Goldsmith. And so constantly, when I was with my grandfather, I would be reminded of poetry. I would have poetry on my ear, and I was minded by a grandaunt, and she would sit me up on her lap, and she would again recite poems to me. None of these people read poems to me. They always recited. And I think I always knew I wanted to write, but I didn't actually start writing, taking myself seriously as a writer until I was in my late 30s. So all those years, I suppose something must have been going in, because when I started writing, I wanted to write novels and make millions, but all I was writing was poetry. So I said, well, this is what's coming. Let me do this. And I'm so glad that I'm writing poetry, because it's a wonderful world and there's so many amazing poets out there, and it can be so innovative and so exciting. There's some incredible poets doing really creative work in poetry today, and it's really wonderful to be part of such a community.
No, I mean, that's just amazing. Grandfather and grandma have such an impact on your life. But you know what amazes me even more is that you must have kept that all that to your head until you were 30. So what motivated that writing at 30? Was it you went to a recital group or a festival of poetry? Or what did you do that got you out? All those things that's been put inside of you as a child.
Well, I remember writing a story about Smurfs going down a tunnel or something when I was about 5 or 6, and I was always writing little bits and pieces. And as an adult, I did a degree in English, but that was quite disempowering as a writer. What I learned from my degree in English was that very few women write, that mostly it's men who write, mostly it's white men who write, and if you're a woman and you want to write, well, really, you better be absolutely incredibly good. So I kind of went off into a corner and said, okay, I'm not going to write. So I went out and I lived in India for many, many years, and I was very busy there working with young people, working with children. But I discovered when I came back to Ireland, so I left India in 2008, and I moved back to Ireland with my daughter, who was then 2 1/4. And for the first time in my life, I was kind of confined to base. I basically had a 2 1/4-year-old child, and she wouldn't go to anybody else. So I was pretty much spending all of my time with her. And then I found a creche. It was kind of a Steiner kindergarten. She would go in there for maybe 2 hours every day. Initially, it was like half an hour, and then it became an hour, and then it became 2 hours. And while she was in there, I would walk. And as I walked, I began to write in my head, and I would have a notebook in my pocket. And so all of my first year almost of poems were, you know, 4 and 5. They looked almost like Emily Dickinson poems, because the notebook was small. So the poems couldn't be any longer than, you know, the lines couldn't be longer than that. So it's really interesting how something we consider imaginative and idealistic and kind of this thing that happens, you know, the muse and all of that, the very practical reality of, have you a pen in your pocket? Have you a notebook? What's the shape of your notebook? You know, does your pen write properly? These are part of the things that make poetry happen. So there's a very material side to a very kind of imaginative activity.
Wow, that took my breath away. Just now, your first book, the collection of your first poetry called A Compound of Word, by Yoda Press, 2019. how did you feel when that actually came out, when you had together a book? And
yeah, no, I was very excited. I suppose for me, my first book was my grimoire, which was a geometry, the geometry of love between the elements, which came out a few years before from an Arklow-based press called Poetry Buff. And that was a tiny little grimoire, which is a medieval book of French, a French word for a medieval book of spells. So I kind of like that, because for me, poetry is about making spells, making magic, changing things, but people not realizing, you know, enchanting. All those words like chant and spell. I like to think poetry is a form of chant. It is a form of spelling. So that was very exciting. But then to see something which I suppose was more considered, and I had been writing for longer, and the poems in it came from over a longer period, and then it was a larger collection. For that to come out in Delhi from Yoda Press was so, so exciting. Yeah, it was an amazing experience.
Now, that is, we're hoping to hear your first poem in just 1 minute. I'm just going to get you to start your first poem. But you are also a teacher, as well as a writer. You're a mentor, you're a facilitator. That is so much, and all to do with your words, isn't it? Do you want to tell me a little bit about your being a facilitator? Because we want to know what
When I finished college, I worked in various different jobs, and I ended up teaching English in Poland, and I came back, and I finally, and then I lived in India for a while, and I came back to Ireland to do a postgraduate diploma in education, and that was specializing in teaching English. So I suppose I got trained as a teacher in that way, but I found it always very difficult to teach in schools and in institutions, because of, you know, there's a set course, and so regardless of what your students need, you have to present them with this fixed material, and then even if they decide, you know, I'd like to study with Fiona for a few months, but then I want to go off and do something else, that's also not possible within institutions. And suddenly I find myself at a point in my life where I can be a facilitator. I don't have to grade my students. I can tell them, you know, this is amazing what you're doing, and I don't have to say this is 80%, this is 70, this is 50, this is 40, this fails. I don't have any of that. I have the joy of just saying to people, you know, this is wonderful what you're doing, and then, you know, if you look a little bit more at this, or if you look at it differently, or have you read these other writers? And so I can bring to the people I work with in facilitation and in mentoring that what they specifically need, and not what some outside organization or what some accreditation or whatever requires of them. So that's really, you know, helping people find their own voices and find different ways of expressing what it is they have to say. And as I say to everybody I work with, there's only one person in the world who can write what's in your head, and that's you.
Fiona, so I'm sure already there are people that's going to be ringing Near FM saying, we want that facilitator. Because I'm excited because we do have a voice. And sometimes the school squashes it and we can't get it out. But when we get a facilitator who actually see our voice as unique, I think that's fantastic. We're going to talk about your Indian poetry work that you do in a few minutes. But could you just give us a poem just as a tester? Because I'm telling you, listener, we are under an enchanter of poetry.
Well, maybe... So the poems that you've chosen from the poems I sent you, one was written at the very beginning of lockdown this time last year. And one of them was written about 3 or 4 years ago. And one of them was written maybe 10 years ago. So I'm going to start with the most recent poem.
Okay.
Because I think it is about freedom. But it was also a moment when I felt like my entire creative life had just stopped. My life had stopped. And I think a lot of people at the moment have that feeling. And it was kind of me trying to find my way back. And fortunately, I connected with a poet friend in Berlin, and a poet friend in Toronto, and another poet friend in Dublin. And these regular meetings with these people on Zoom, online, has enabled me to keep going. So, you know, I think it's about community for me. So I'll start with this poem, My End. I am worded out. I have written my last poem. From now on, the words I pen will be prose. Body bound, earthy, no flights of fantasy, too much grime on my window. The casual exchanges with passers-by while out walking will be translated into facts and figures, or maybe qualitative data. But no rhythm, no rhyme, and every line must reach the edge of the page. At no stage should sound or whimsy unsound move me from line to the next, but simply the logic of reason. It shall be measurable and not a mix of guessing and consulting. No, I am done with poetry. Poe, the river, the chamber pop, the making, the forming, the growing between the river mud of poetry and self-seeding trees. There shall be no more. No rhyme, only reason and no season. No firing pots, no watering seeds and saplings. I shall sanitize, not fantasize. Hand in plastic glove, heart firmly inside chest. Lung capacity at reasonably functioning. Brain can go slow. I shall state the facts. Each in isolation, kept well apart from others, lest the fires of imagination should connect them and start a fire and fire the pots and engulf the trees, which will survive the seeds at least beneath the soil to sprout again and sapling themselves some buds and leaf themselves some flowers and bloom some fruits, which my mouth dripping, salivating can truly desire.
Oh, wow. I think, you know, there's a right, someone with a writer's block knows there's a way out. We can still come out of it again. Thank you so much. So eloquent, and the words and the imagery that you got of someone. I mean, can I ask you a question? How long did it take you to put that together?
I have to admit, there are some poems that I have worked on for years. And, you know, finally, I'm happy with them. That particular poem was almost like I had not been writing. I had been working very hard at trying to put together a chapter for a PhD, a very academic process. I was so frustrated, so fed up. I thought, this is it now. I will never write another word of poetry. And I sat down to document the end of my poetry writing. And I don't know, it just came out like that. It probably could do with a good shake and an edit and being organized, but there's something about the energy of it which I love.
Yes,
it's almost like talking myself back into writing and creating and just enjoying words.
And I think that was born in the way that you performed it, and also for all of us that's listening, that you've got that kind of thing. And I know that during COVID, many writers have said to me, Mary, I can't write, I'm not doing anything, I can't come on the program yet. And this kind of poem, kind of like, yeah, we're not alone in this. If someone like Fiona and the greats can do this, then we too can hope there's a future to come out and the flower will bloom again. So
yeah.
I really appreciate that poem. And I like the fact that you start from the immediate, we're going to go further on. Now, your work in India, how did that come about? Because I love all kind of poetry, and it seems as if you have a unique binding with the people of India and the work of poetry.
Well I first went to India when I was 22, and I think because of COVID, this is the longest I've been away from India in my life, in my adult life. I'm now 48, so I've spent more of my life connected to India than disconnected. And I always tell people, I didn't go to India to find myself, or I didn't go to India, you know, to do yoga or save the world or anything. I fell in love, and so I moved to India. And I got married in 2002, and I had my daughter there in 2005. So while I was there, I worked as a teacher. I worked with children in private schools. I worked with children in slums. I ran a non-formal school, which was for children who weren't able to get themselves, who weren't attending conventional school. And the idea was to give them a certain level of education, get them back into school. I've trained teachers. I've worked with Balwadis. They're kind of like play schools for small children, where they're fed and they're entertained during the day, given some basic, you know, ABC kind of education from the age of about 2 to 5. And then at 5, they go into the larger school system. So, yeah, I've worked in all these areas in teaching in India. And then I came back. But India is very much a part of who I am. And as I say to people, if I'm Indian, then I'm Tamil. So, India is a very huge part of my life and of who I am.
Now, there wasn't. Thank you very much for that. That's a great insight because of your connection. I also notice your beautiful attire on your profile, which is just beautiful. the India attire that you had on there. Now, there was an Indian poetry celebration of world poetry. Give me a bit more about that. How you got involved with that?
That was quite wonderful because it was very funny because about 3 or 4 days before that happened, I got a call from an Irish-based Malayali poet, Aswati, and she'll be launching a collection soon, so there'll be more about that. And she asked me, she had seen me performing at a Kranti event for International Workers' Day in May, the 1st of May. And so I had performed at that. She had heard my poetry, and she had asked me if I would be interested in being part of this Pen Makkal organization. So Pen means a woman, and Makkal is kind of, Pen Kavita. Pen Kadavi. Kadavi? Anyway, I can't quite remember the word. But anyway, Pen is the word for woman in both Tamil and in Malayalam. And and Pen, as you know, is a pen that you write with as well. So this organization, anyway, they celebrate poets all over India, and poets from all backgrounds, especially South Indian poets, and especially Dalit and women poets. And Dalit poets are poets who come from a community. Dalit means oppressed. So this would be the community who were traditionally called lower caste. They were the lowest of the caste. And they're still in many ways excluded, even though it's against the Indian constitution, against the law. Still, there are many subtle ways in which this casteism shows its ugly head. So the writing of those people is very, very powerful and very much giving voice where voice has previously been suppressed. So I was really honored to be part of this very esteemed audience, incredible poets, and they were all, people were reading poetry. It's available online. If you go to the Poetria Facebook page, they have a link there. 2.5 hours of incredible poetry. Each poet just coming on and telling their truth. Really stunning, stunning work.
Do you know what? That is just amazing. On that note, maybe we should quickly talk about the theme, because it's almost like poetry can set you free when you're able to express it, isn't it? You met these beautiful women and poets in India, and they performed this. I will definitely check it up, and we'll say it again at the end of the program. But what I wanted to ask you is that those people were getting free through their poetry by writing it and enabling other people to get free by expressing their truth, as you said. What does the word freedom mean to you?
The word freedom. Well, you know, I have been on many marches and protests and things in India and in Ireland, and the Hindi, Urdu, kosher word for freedom is azadi, and azad means free, and azadi is kind of a chant. So when you say to me freedom, what comes to my mind is this word azadi, because so that's the first thing to say. And I suppose for me, freedom is about that sense of being comfortable and being safe to be who you are and where you want to be, and not having to worry, oh, I shouldn't be here because it's not safe for me, or, oh, somebody may attack me, somebody may yell at me or say something to me, so I'm not safe, so I'm not free. It's also about feeling that you can't say exactly what you think, that you don't have that freedom to say that. So I suppose I'm thinking of restrictions. So the freedom to just be who you are, wherever you are. And I think all of us benefit from all the people around us being free. Because if somebody in the room is being silent, or somebody is scared to come in the room, then that person's voice is missing and that person's truth is missing. And so we're not getting a full picture. It's like a rainbow without all the colors. We're missing that shade. We're missing that color. We're missing that tone. We're missing that perspective. And so, that to me is what freedom is.
Right, I tell you, I would, and we're not allowed to mark it, we just celebrate it, I would give you 100% because you brought the rainbow in, you brought the colours in, this is a poet at the most. And thank you so much for that answer, and it dwells in me very, very deeply. Appreciate it so much. Now, can we have your second poem? Do you know, we're coming very quickly towards the end, we're having a fabulous time. What is your next poem? Do you want to introduce it to us?
Well, if we're going to have to shorten it out, which poem would you like first?
Do you know what? Because we've just talked about kitchen. I like kitchen. You talked about freedom.
Perfect. I shall talk about that. So it's a ghazal, which is an Urdu, Hindi, but originally from Arabic form. And at the end of the first two lines, the word gets repeated. And then every stanza is two lines. And at the end of each stanza, the word gets repeated again. So just to notice that. And this one was written as a result of a conversation I had with a colleague about his experiences growing up in Kashmir in the north of India, which is one of the most militarized zones in the world. There's a man mentioned in this who carried out horrible acts of violence against his own community. And when he was away from the place, people attacked his kitchen. And that's kind of at the center of the poem. Distance is measured in the valley of kitchen as steps between rooms from hall to kitchen, a place of plenty within home walls, safe where you prepare akhni, rice, the kitchen. When you move to Delhi, you've left the home, gone out, been nourished from another's kitchen. Early one eve, hot pots bubble, delicious aromas come, Saqib's kitchen. That evening, his mother chases the truck, her husband grabbed from his kitchen. His body, broken in two, is later returned. Coldness now enters the kitchen. For Pampor Chalo, the people give rice for Tahar from their kitchens. The taste of freedom brings an angry mob to Papa Kishtwari's home, his kitchen, where the murderer's meals were cooked. Two boys stand hungry for revenge in the kitchen. The house hollowed out by anger, revenge, the fan bent, not yet broken in the kitchen. They finish the job, blades of fear blunted by Azadi in an enemy's kitchen. A neighbor's home steps away in the valley. A new recipe needed, Azad's kitchen.
Oof. That was a heavy one, wasn't it? We could almost, you poured us into those kitchens and the things that were happening. I mean, I can't say enough, and I'm sure the listeners will be ringing in and saying, you know what, we need this facilitator. Thank you so much for that. Thank you for giving us an insight to what happened to other people, other cultures that we don't sample, except people like you, where you used your poetry to express it to us. And I'm in deep appreciation of that. Now, before we try to get your last poem, because we are coming very quickly to the end, I would like to know, I know you teach, where can we get your program to be
well,
part
of? Well, at the moment, I have a workshop coming up. It'll be over 6 weeks, and it's being hosted by the Irish Writers' Centre, and I think there are still some places left. So if you Google Irish Writers' Centre and you go to their courses, you'll find my face there. And it's a much younger face, I have to confess. On that, there you can sign up. All are welcome. I suppose my work focuses very much on using, as the course is titled, all the words in your head. So I say to people, just because you're in here and the majority language here is English, doesn't mean that if you have a word in Chichewa, you have a word in Arabic, you have a word in Irish, whatever word is coming into your head when you're writing, put that word down in that language, because it's almost like there are borders between countries and we have created borders between languages. But when we use words from other languages in languages, then we're breaking down those borders. And I learn a new word from you, you learn a new word from me, and gradually, brick by brick, we can take down those borders between languages. And language is the way we organize our world in many cases, you know, and the law controls our lives. The law is written in words. So one way to fight back is to write. Poetry is my fighting back, my write back at you.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, we will, I'm sure people will Google that. I'm certainly going to try and get on there. Now, Fiona, before we go to the end, because I'm really coming very short on time, where can we follow you? Where can we keep on following you?
So I have a website. It's www.fionabolger, and that's F-I-O-N-A, and then Bolger, B-O-L-G-E-R, and then the word poetry with no spaces. So it's www.fionabulgerpoetry.com, and you can find me there, and you'll find my email address if you want to contact me about mentoring or just to know if I have more courses running or anything like that. So please come visit me. And there's also poetry prompts up there, and they're all free, and you can just click on them and have a read and maybe have a little write as well. And it will be lovely to meet some of your listeners there.
Oh,
you're very
right.
Welcome.
And you also have a newsletter as well, because I signed up for it, so thank you. So thank you. Look, Fiona, it's been such a wonderful time. You've given us so much insight and so much encouragement. And we take note that we need to have a notebook and a pen every so often, so it doesn't matter. So that we jot down those spontaneous moments. And if you had one last word, 30 second, to say to people around us that from different language group and they just want to tell their story, what would be the one advice you give them? Where do they start?
To put the pen to the page and keep moving it. And don't edit, you know, just keep writing. And as you write, you sometimes we think we have to organize in our heads what we want to say and then write. No. The very writing itself is a way of organizing. And try to think of writing as going to the river, putting your hands in the river, getting them in the mud of the river bank, and pulling out, you know, at the side of the river, pulling out that mud. And that mud will have stones in it and plastic and cans and twigs and all kinds of junk. You bring that mud home and then you tidy it up and you can make it into something beautiful and bake it. So when you start writing, putting your pen to the page is like going to the river and pulling up the mud. Don't worry about what comes up with the mud. Just all of that mud is what you're looking for. And when you have all those words on the page, you then will see which bits are the stones you need to pull out, which bits are the twigs you don't want, which bit is the Coca-Cola can somebody threw away, you know? So, and then you can form your words, but you need the mud. And the mud is just the putting it all down on the page. No editing, no thinking. Set your timer on your phone. Say, I will write for 5 minutes. Pick a word, you know, even open a book. Pick 5 words completely randomly. And when you get stuck for something to write, write that word and keep writing that word until, you know, until more words come into your head. And then trust. You
Fiona.
Have it inside you. It's just to fool that part of your brain that goes, oh, I'm not good enough. Oh, I'm not good enough. Distract that with something else.
Thank you so much, Fiona Bulger. You are being great. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank
we
you
really
so
appreciate you.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you.
They know your first name is free, last name is dumb, but you still believe in where we're from.